and I'm so thrilled to be with you today for a special conversation with my friend, Nicole Zazowski. Nicole is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and you may remember her from our conversation way back on the show where we talked about her last book, From Lost to Found. And today we get to talk all about her brand new book, What If It's Wonderful? We talk about celebration, about joy, about some things that hold us back from that, like cynicism and pessimism. It was such a special conversation, one that I keep thinking about long after the interview. And so I can't wait to introduce you to Nicole. Before we get to the conversation, I want to share about one of our sponsors, the Shine Bright Journal. I would love to give you the Shine Bright Journal. It's a free 100-page journal that you can go grab at radicalradiance.live. And I hope it's an encouragement to you. Help me welcome our friend Nicole to the show. Nicole, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to have you today.
Oh, I'm so excited to get to talk to you again.
I know. I woke up this morning thinking about it, and it's so fun. Like I said before we hit record, when you get to have multiple conversations with an author, right? Like their next project comes out, and you and I have connected several times since we've spoken last here on the show, which feels like 5 years ago, even though it was probably like a year and a half.
I think we crammed a lot of life in these last 18 months.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You have crammed a new sweet baby into your family and all kinds of new things, I think, since we've talked. I feel like life has changed so much.
Yeah. My middle child was probably just born.
Yeah.
Because my second two are only 14 months apart. So depending on when we caught each other last time, it was a full season.
I know. It's so crazy. So, which I feel like that has just been the last 2 years of our life. So,
amen.
I feel like everybody I catch up with.
A different version.
Yeah, I know. So I'm so excited that we get to chat today about your new book. It comes out the week that this is going to be airing. It's called What If It's Wonderful? And Nicole, I just have to say, I saw the title of your book and it just felt like a breath of fresh air. It felt like exactly what we need in this season, because I think if we weren't maybe already struggling with things like cynicism or like struggling to fight for joy and to celebrate in our lives, we certainly have in the last couple years, or at least I have. And so I always love kind of hearing the story behind the story. I'm curious for you, how did you begin to kind of feel led to talk about this idea of celebration? How did that come about?
Yeah, it was really twofold. I kind of call them the two prongs that led me to really explore this idea of celebration. And of course, it led to many other branches in that thought process and conversation. But the first was when you and I talked last time, I likely outlined a season that was largely characterized by change and loss. I don't think our seasons in life are either all pain or all joy. I think
they're
almost always a combination of both. But as we reflect on our lives, I think we can all name or define seasons that sort of lean in one direction or another. And while that season, as I look back on it, was very sweet and precious to me in so many ways, it was painful and it was long. And the pain sort of hit from all sides, and it was many years. And so I noticed when I started stepping into a season that had more good news and breakthrough, I was completely unable to embrace the joy that should have come with that season. My celebration and joy was most often accompanied by a lot of fear. And, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop, unwilling, I was going to say unable, but unwilling is the better word, to take a chance on hope. And I felt like celebration always came with a catch. Like if you step into it, just be ready for it to be ripped out from underneath you. And so That was one experience. And then concurrently, as I was enjoying this good news and breakthrough to the extent that I could, given what I just shared, I realized that I really had no idea what it looks like to connect with God in the light of your joy. I have been a Christian most of my life. You know, I became a Christian early on. I was raised in a faithful home, and my faith has grown and deepened over the years. But I was a little bit sad when I realized I am so clear, especially after the season I just walked through, on what it looks like to engage with God in my pain and cultivate an intimate relationship with Him in that place. I know exactly where He is. I know exactly who He is to me. His character is clear. I know how we're interacting. And I realized that, I guess subconsciously, that I sort of pictured Christ being so close and walking me over this really tough ground to lead me to this peaceful, joyful place, and then letting go and saying, have fun, let me know when you need me again. Mm. And that made me, so I was hesitant to step into the light, one, because I was afraid, but two, I didn't want to lose the relationship that I found with God in the dark. Mm. And around this same time, I was doing a Zoom gathering at a church. It was the height of the pandemic, so it was a speaking event, but it was remote.
Sure.
For a church in South Carolina. And a group from this church gathered to listen. And then there was a time for Q&A at the end. And it was about my first book. And one gentleman said, I love the intimacy that you describe with God and how well you got to know God in your suffering. I'm actually in a different kind of season of joy. And I'm just wondering, how can I find what you have in my circumstances? And I was like, let me get back to you on that.
Sir, I'm not sure.
That was basically, I'm sure I tried to say something intelligent, but that was basically how I felt.
Yeah.
So that just took me on a deep dive to not only want to feel more brave and hopeful in the midst of my joy, but also understand what does it look like to celebrate with God, not just let God lead us to our place of celebration.
Hey friends, quick break in this conversation to remind you of something. If you are loving the show, you're loving the conversations we're having, it would mean the absolute world to me if you would leave a rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts for Radical Radiance. When that happens, when more of those happen, the show gets put in front of more women, and in turn, it allows them the opportunity to take part in conversations that will show them more about what it looks like to radiate the heart of Jesus. And I can't think of anything better than that. So it would mean the world to me if you would take just 2 minutes of your time and leave a rating and a written review. I'd love to hear what you think. Now, let's get back to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I have about 12 questions that I know we're going to get to as we walk through the rest of this conversation after you sharing that. And I love this so much. I think it matters so much to us in this season. And one of the things you touched on it a little bit is, and you talk about this in the book, it's things that hinder our delight or our joy. I know that's something that you talk about in the book. So what are some examples of those things that maybe people could start to see as red flags, right? As they're looking at their own lives and wondering, okay, what is there right now that is maybe hindering my ability to celebrate with God or to experience joy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's some main ones, pessimism, cynicism, which is similar to pessimism, but it more doubts people's motives. So where I noticed this was in my relationship with God. So doubting His motives, like,
okay,
you know, crazy things I don't actually believe, but when you're hurting, your brain will try and come up with these narratives to make sense of what doesn't really make sense to you. So, you know, God only wants to bless other people and not me, or he's trying to teach me a lesson, or, you know, things like that. And then shame actually is a big one too, that, that I talk about from a few different angles throughout the book. But we are so often committed to wanting to be our own savior and wanting to earn a celebration. And we are hesitant to celebrate when we feel like it's freely given to us. We are so tenacious about wanting a reason. And then there's smaller things. You know, there are many things that will dampen our celebration. So maybe you do feel joy and you experience delight, but then you start thinking about, oh, who wasn't at the party? Who didn't show up? Or how, oh, it would have been better if. You know, you start thinking about how your delight could be improved upon. And our, the neuroscience is pretty clear. Our brain is not very helpful to us when it comes to delight and joy and celebration. And that was really interesting to me, when it comes to, and I will probably talk about this more later, but just the importance of practice. Because left on neutral, your brain is not going to veer toward joy. Like, few among us just naturally drift in that direction. And so the discipline around the discipline element of celebration is supported not only in scripture, but but in the neuroscience as well.
And just thinking joy is one of the fruits of the spirit, right? So like, what does it look like to look more like Christ? One of those things is joy. And that challenges me during hard seasons, right? Like, one of the expressions of the way that I look more like Jesus is joy and delight, right? And so, and I'm even thinking, the word cynicism is challenging to me. And I know a lot of my listeners, I know a lot of people listening are in ministry, maybe work inside the church. And I'm thinking, and this is just one example, and you can put it into practice in your own life, right? Like, if we've experienced maybe complaining, or we've even within our own relationships, we've become cynical, even within the church in the last couple of years, I think we have. I see a lot of that. And I see some of that in myself after the last couple of years, and being married to a pastor, having to walk through challenging decisions all the time and people's opinions about those challenging decisions all the time. I can see how it's led to some cynicism in my own heart and in my own life. How do we break that? Like, how do we... You know, when some of that concern is validated or feels validated, right? Like, does that question even make sense?
No, it's, and what I love about the topic of celebration is that, you know, we often think of it as happening on the far side of a dream realized or a goal achieved. But what you're getting at is we do have choice. And this is not about a change in our circumstances. This is about cultivating joy in our hearts, even if it's, you know, joy is not a denial of the cost. That would be toxic positivity, where we just ignore. You know, toxic positivity dismisses pain. Joy trusts God's promises in pain. So that doesn't mean that we're not robots. Like, if there's conflict in interpersonal relationships, you know, in a church, of course we're going to feel disappointment or hurt around that. I think what's interesting about pessimism and cynicism is they're really fancy fancy versions of control. They would fall in that control bucket when we think about the ways that we cope with pain.
Yeah.
And as a restoration therapist, real quick, the four main ones are blame, shame, control, escape. So pessimism and cynicism it's trying to manage our feelings, keep our expectations low so we can't get hurt. And so when you know that, mm-hmm. you can think, huh, well, that's a reaction or a secondary emotion. Those don't happen without a primary emotion getting hit. And I'm trying to keep myself safe. So what am I feeling about my identity? And or what am I feeling about my sense of security and safety? Or how am I feeling about myself? Or how am I feeling about a relationship? And usually then that question will lead you to, oh, I'm feeling really powerless in this position I've been put in. Or I'm feeling like no matter what I do, it's not good enough. I can't measure up to expectations. Mm-hmm. And so once you know that root pain, then you can address it with the truth in a way that helps you not need pessimism and cynicism as your guard. Those are just your brain's way of trying to protect you. And your brain is trying to be helpful, and we just have to call it out and say that's not the path to peace and joy. The tricky thing is I find they most often, not that they can't accompany feelings of identity, but I think they most often protect some sort of feeling around our sense of safety.
Yeah.
And the tough part is most of us would agree, okay, the truth about identity is pretty straightforward. I might struggle to feel that way right now, but mm-hmm. I believe that all human beings have value.
Like
that's more straightforward. The problem with safety is, are we ever really truly safe in life? No. Yeah. Like life by nature is not completely safe. So just real quick, the three truths that help someone feel secure in an unsafe world are the fact that we are not alone. So no matter what we go through, we are not alone. We are not in total control, but we do have empowerment. We have agency. We can make choices.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is, and this is sometimes a conversation or a question for later, depending on where you are in your pain, but if you have to go through this pain, what is the growing and learning and goodness that you can take with you into the future that will benefit your future life, your future self, other relationships? So, you know, if you have to go through this, how can you grow through it is another way of saying that.
Yeah, that's so good. And sometimes I think we just don't stop long enough to ask ourselves that question, right?
Like, no,
if we
rarely.
Are going through, if we are going through something hard, like if we would just stop long enough to, I don't know. I always see those things in hindsight, right? Like I see them years later, but as you're saying all of that, it's challenging me to pray and ask God to help me see those opportunities that I have to learn and grow. As they're happening, to get me out of the way enough where I'm able to see that. So,
That challenges and here's the beautiful thing. You know, it's not too late. If you're processing those things, it will help your brain start to learn to see this way. Mm-hmm. And then over time, you know, maybe you'll catch it right after it happens, or eventually, you know, during or before, be in a space where you can see it as it's happening and be able to make a different choice. So if you resonate with, you know, if you're listening and you resonate with what Rebecca just said, because I certainly do, I just want to encourage you. It's still worthy practice, even in retrospect, because it will help you moving into the future.
Yeah, that's so good. Okay, I want to talk about some of the lies that we believe about happiness, because I think sometimes we just need to name those things and call them out before we're able to point ourselves back to truth. And so I know you talk about that in the book, and I always want to give this caveat of I want people to go grab the book, because that's why we're here and that's why we're supporting Nicole. But for the sake of this conversation, I'd love to hear a few of those things that you feel are really common that we believe about happiness that just aren't true.
Yes, I think sadly, especially when I've been a part of conversations in more faith circles, I think there's this subtle idea that happiness is like the hedonistic version of joy, like that we should glean no joy from, not no joy, but that we should look down upon or somehow dismiss the sensation of feeling happy, the experience of actually feeling happiness. And I, in my research, in my personal experiences, I've worked on growing in these areas around joy. I have come to the conclusion that no, Christ is absolutely in the midst of our happiness and loves for us to delight in his good gifts and celebrate how he's moving in our lives. I think for the Christian or for the Christ follower, if you've put your trust in Jesus, it's just simply incomplete to the joy that's available to us as a Christ follower. So I think we can sometimes fall on either end of the spectrum. Either we sort of dismiss happiness as just this thing that's not very holy, or we wait to feel happy to celebrate it all. We think our celebration is stuck inside a certain set of circumstances. A Bible story that I love that illustrates this is when a bunch of Jesus's followers, the disciples included, but it says a larger crowd. The Spirit gives them the power to perform this miracle, and they're amazed and delighted by what the Spirit has done through their willingness to serve in that moment. And, you know, the Bible doesn't go into a lot of detail on what their celebration looks like, but they're thrilled and they come back to Jesus and they're so excited. And I'm paraphrasing here, but Jesus says, just be careful that this is not where your celebration should be. You know, your ultimate celebration is in heaven. And I think we could read that passage through either one of those two lenses that I just described. Mm-hmm. We could say, oh, he was criticizing their happiness in that moment. We should never feel any excitement about God's movement in our lives. Or we could say, you know, that celebration is only stuck inside, you know, good things happening. But Jesus wasn't saying that. What he was saying is, don't expect more joy from the gift than it was meant to give. Like, this is a good thing. We should absolutely celebrate when we get good news or when we see breakthrough in our lives or when God's movement is just so clear. Absolutely, we should rejoice. But it's just a taste. It's just an appetizer for the joy that ultimately a life with Christ will bring. And certainly, you know, Revelation is clear about the joy that's on the horizon for all of us. So it's just expecting more joy from a gift than it was meant to give will ultimately leave us feeling disappointed.
Yeah. And I think we can all think of examples of that in our lives. I mean, even things like marriage that are a beautiful gift from God.
Absolutely.
They are not at all meant to satisfy our identity or, you know, and we can so easily place so much of our affection that was only meant for God into these earthly things that even themselves are gifts from Him, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's, I think I'm asking myself the question of like, how do I handle joy properly and see it like as, mm-hmm. as a gift from God? Yes, but not placing my identity in those things. And I back to identity, I think at least for me, that's what I do, right? Oh. Like I put my identity in those things.
Yep.
And it's a misplaced identity that was only meant mm-hmm. for my relationship with God. Does that sound fair?
Yeah. No, another phrase, or a concept that's helpful. It's been helpful to my own growth in this area. Cause I'm like you, I can definitely invest my identity in some of these gifts that I've been given. And I think just this idea of disordered loves, so like wrongly ordered loves. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to enjoy or appreciate or celebrate with God and with the people in your community. But if it's in the wrong order, it is not going to feel very good in the long run. And it will ultimately leave you feeling disappointed or, you know, I always say what sits at the center of our affection will determine the satiation of our joy. So if the wrong thing's at the center, we're not going to feel very satisfied. Only Jesus belongs in that spot. But then if you picture, you know, the ripple effects, like throwing a rock into water, there's rings that spread out from that we do delight in His good gifts. They just don't belong at the center.
That's so good. And one of the things that you use in the book, some language that you use that I think is really helpful, especially after everything we've talked about, is how we begin to see celebration in an active way instead of a passive way. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear more about that because I think, at least in my own life, I am very passive about celebration. I'm not great at stopping and remembering or savoring those things with God. And so I don't know, what does that look like to be more active in that?
Yeah, this was something I was curious about as well. In the last third of the book, I would say, you know, absolutely continues with personal story and biblical application and neuroscience, but it's very focused on the practical. And so I would definitely encourage anyone listening to definitely take a deep dive into that portion of the book, especially. But, and I love part three of the book. If I had to pick a favorite child of the three parts, that might be it. But anyway, I think a few that come to mind because I was like you. I felt like I would walk into a new season and especially a new year. It's one of the reasons I had so much anxiety at the beginning of a new year every year is because I would walk into a new season and feel like, well, I hope I have a reason to celebrate this year or this season. And I see that language so much in especially the first quarter of the year, you know, in social media and in different conversations like, well, I hope this year's different and I get to feel some joy. And I think we will feel so much peace and freedom when we realize God's actually given us a ton of empowerment when it comes to our joy and that, like you said, it's a gift of the Spirit, not a gift of the right circumstances. And maybe, I hope, some of our joy will come up and hit us in the face and just, you know, that we'll get to respond naturally in that way. But I was annoyed at first and then very, very empowered and felt freed when I realized, no, there's a discipline and choice component to joy. And again, this is not dismissing pain. It's inviting joy into the conversation where both can sit together. And so just some three practices that are very doable that I just love. If I had to pick favorites, these might be it. But the first is the practice of savoring. And the reason I love savoring is it celebrates the ordinary. So
yeah,
moments that you and I might be tempted to just blow past as kind of the background of our everyday lives, it pulls them out. And we have to know that our brains are very efficient. They do not like to hold on to information that they don't have to. So these are moments in your day that your brain is not going to bother to hold, because it doesn't see any natural reason to celebrate them. And so it's training your brain to pull these everyday moments out. My most used example is holding my daughter, who's one, just turning one. And, you know, I hold her many, many times a day, especially before I put her to sleep. But if I can, and the way that you savor is that you ask your five traditional senses what they're going to remember about a moment. So if I can remember, you know, smelling that sweet infant smell that nobody can seem to figure out how to bottle, feeling her little peach fuzz head underneath my chin, hearing her little snores, feeling her settle heavy on my chest. You know, there's probably a lukewarm coffee taste in my mouth from, you know, me nursing my coffee all day. But just then my brain says, oh, this is a significant moment. This is something to celebrate. And it's not about adding to my life. It's about not missing what's already there. And that to me is so beautiful, because there's reasons to celebrate in all of our everyday lives. And savoring just helps us, gives us a active way of doing that. Another one of my favorites is Thanksgiving. We talk a lot in our culture, which I'm grateful for, about how gratitude increases our joy. And what gratitude does is it helps us notice and name all the things that we're savoring, really. It helps us notice and name the goodness in our lives. And I would say that takes us, and the research supports this, that takes us about halfway down the path in terms of our joy. What Thanksgiving does is it doubles it. So Thanksgiving is the expression of the gratitude that we feel. So me telling you, Rebecca, I am so thankful to have another conversation with you. I just love you. I enjoy talking with you on Instagram in between our conversations, but the chance to just sit down and have this time, I'm really thankful to you for having me on again. That just increases my joy in getting to share that with you.
And mine.
Oh, good. and hopefully, and I meant every word of that. That's not just an example. But hopefully, the receiver is, their joy is increased by the affirmation. But really, it's about celebrating the gift with the giver. And this is one of my favorite channels of celebrating with God. Because he's the giver of all good gifts, and just being able to celebrate the gift with him will increase our joy. So putting more Thanksgiving in our prayers. I so often, you know, come panting into prayer like, help, you know, and that is a beautiful form of prayer too. I'm not dismissing that at all, but I think, it's really, really beautiful when we can incorporate Thanksgiving. And then just regular ritual. I think Sabbath is a natural time to do this. We often think about what we shouldn't do on Sabbath, like what don't work, don't get ahead for the week, don't, you know, just rest. And that is, again, all good. I'm not dismissing that in the least. But I think it can enhance our celebration when we add something to that day, or figure out, you know, what's a special meal, or what's a special question we can ask each other that we can count on. Because when there's a rhythm to our celebration, then our body starts to anticipate it. and it starts to get excited for it, and it cues our senses to relax into it. Like I had a friend whose mom would always play the same classical music when their Sabbath started, and the smell of fresh bread would always be in the oven, and she'd open the windows, and it was just like, it was almost automatic for her to rest into that place.
Yeah. I saw a recent example of this in one of my friends. We went and got coffee, and she brought her little boy. And he's just turned one.
Oh.
And she has him trained to fall asleep to a certain worship song.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Yes. And she did it with another one of her children. I think her middle just, it didn't work for her, but their first son and their 1 year old, she found this song, and I forget what song it was, but they were playing it in the car one day. And as soon as it started, he fell asleep, and she just noticed, like something about the melody just put him to sleep.
Wow.
And so the next time he was really fussy in public, she turned that song on and he went to sleep. And so he got really fussy in the coffee shop that day. And I had never seen her do, I'd never seen anybody do this, but I'd never seen her do this. And so she got out her phone and she turned it down, the volume down really low. And she said, "Okay, buddy, like, let me get your song." And she put it not like right up to his ear, but just kind of on her chest. And she was holding him. And I mean, within 15 seconds.
No way.
He closed his eyes and he started going to sleep.
Yeah.
And so I started asking her questions. I'm like, how did you do this? I'm not a mom yet. I need to know all of your ways. And I just thought that that was such a beautiful example of like turning even your toddler to truth and to something that will like slow them down. And he just went right to sleep. It amazed me.
That is a beautiful example of that. Just cueing the body to rest and enjoy. And wow. I love that.
I did too. It was so good. So I'm putting that one in my back pocket.
Yeah. No, that's you should absolutely hang on to that for when the time comes.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I just can't get enough of this conversation. I could talk to you all day about this book. I'm so excited for it to come into the world. So it's called, again, What If It's Wonderful? It is out in the world when people will be listening to this conversation, which I know just has to feel so exciting to you, Nicole. I know book writing is such a long process. And so I'm celebrating alongside you as this launches this week. And there's one question that I ask all of my guests on Radical Radiance that I'm so excited to ask you. So as God was giving me direction on the path he wanted to take the podcast, he really kept bringing up this verse in Psalm 34. Mm-hmm. It's verse 5. And it says, "Those who look to him are radiant and their faces are never covered in shame." And the question I love asking right now is, what about Jesus makes you radiant?
I think in the so many things. I think in the context of this conversation, one of the things I've been thinking about is, you know, when we think about having an expectant heart, I think a lot of readers and listeners and anybody who's seen my content have reached out to me and said, you know, bravely asked, do we need to have a certain level of hope or, you know, prove our expectant hearts to God before he's willing to intervene in our circumstances? And for anyone listening to this conversation who just is in the thick of it and the depths of despair and hope just feels so hard to access, I hear you. I see you. I know that place. It hurts so much. And I just want to encourage you that God's faithfulness to us does not depend on our faith. And his goodness is not a function of our goodness. There is absolutely joy to be had in cultivating an expectant heart and having eyes to see delight. You know, everything Rebecca and I talked about is possible no matter what your circumstances are. I just want to encourage you that his presence is not a function of anything we've talked about. He's there. And he is faithful and good regardless of where we are. And that just makes me radiant to think about too.
Yeah. I love that. So good. Well, I am so grateful for you, Nicole. I'm so thankful for a second conversation with you on the show, and I can't wait for our people to get their hands on What If It's Wonderful. So before we go, will you tell everybody how they can connect with you and all those
Yes, things? I love hearing from readers and listeners and try to respond to all the messages. I'm sure I don't do that perfectly, but I do love to hear from you. So my website is a great way to connect with me. It's Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E. ZASOWSKI.com. And I'm just at Nicole Zasowski on Instagram, which is the social media platform I hang out the most, but certainly on Facebook too.
Awesome. 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 Well, I'm so grateful for you. Thank you again for being my guest today.
Oh, I love talking with you, Rebecca. Thanks for having me.
I hope you loved that conversation with Nicole as much as I did, and I hope you'll go grab a copy of What If It's Wonderful. Please tell me what you think about it. I hope that message encourages you as much as it did me, especially right now. And guys, I can't wait to be back with you next episode. We'll be sitting down with my new friend, Noelle Jett, to talk about her new book. It was just such a fun conversation. I can't wait to share it with you, so join us next time.